Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. On the night of February 14th, nearly 10 months ago, a radiation leak occurred at the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant, or WIP, near Carlsbad, New Mexico, when a drum of nuclear waste burst underground. The drum had been shipped from the Los Alamos National Laboratory, or LANL. The nation's only recently operating repository for nuclear waste, the WIP facility has not reopened to receive the waste, as the cause of the ruptured drum remains under investigation. Last Saturday, the New Mexico Environment Department, or NMED, handed down $54 million in proposed fines to both Los Alamos National Laboratory and WIP relating to the February 14th radiation leak and an underground truck fire 9 days earlier. LANL, which shipped the barrel to WIP that exploded underground, faces fines of $36.6 million for 24 cited violations. WIP faces $17.7 million in proposed fines for 13 violations. What are the proposed fines for? What must WIP and LANL do to come into compliance? Are the proposed fines enough? Joining me today to discuss these issues are Santa Fe, New Mexican reporter Patrick Malone and Don Hancock, the director of the Nuclear Waste Program at the Southwest Research and Information Center here in Albuquerque. Welcome to both of you, and thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Don. Good morning, Patrick. I do want to mention we did invite people from WIP and the Department of Energy, or DOE, to join us today. We did extend an invitation to people at Los Alamos National Laboratory. We were able to obtain a joint statement rather than their participation issued on behalf of WIP, the DOE, and LANL, and I'll read that in a bit. We also extended an invitation to the New Mexico Environment Department and the governor's office. So, Don Hancock, you've been studying and monitoring the WIP facility for many years, a facility that opened in 1999, a facility that officials said would never have a leak. Please tell our listeners what is happening at WIP right now. What can happen? What operations is WIP currently permitted to undertake?
So the Department of Energy and its contractors, Nuclear Waste Partnership, that operate WIP, are in the process of sending workers underground, checking for contamination, cleaning up contaminated equipment, those kinds of things. The New Mexico Environment Department has told them that they need to finish closing panel six, the last area that they were putting waste in before panel seven, where the release occurred. That hasn't happened yet. So they're in the process of trying to get the mine back in shape so that they can reduce the contamination, close it up to make it safer.
When you say closing panel six, is that in perpetuity, theoretically?
So what the Environment Department has told them is they need to do what's called an initial closure as soon as possible. And so that's not a permanent closure. That will happen sometime later. All of this is difficult, I guess, in some ways for people to understand, because closing it up, the site up in perpetuity, is something that's supposed to happen down the line in a few years, not necessarily right away. And so that's actually a controversial thing. What kind of closure do they actually need to do? But in the short run, they're trying to put some bulkheads, some closures in panel six, so that if, as we hope doesn't happen, there is an additional release from containers in panel six, it will be better contained than what happened in panel seven.
So they're sending workers down. How many workers are they sending, and is there a risk to them at this point?
They can send up to 74 or 75 workers at a time into the underground. Yes, I believe the workers are at risk. One of my concerns is one of the violations of the permit that isn't cited by the Environment Department yet is that they've stopped monitoring for the cancer-causing volatile organic compounds in the underground that we know are there. So workers are chronically breathing in VOCs in the underground, but they're not being measured either under the permit, which they're required to do, and the workers themselves don't have VOC monitoring. They do have radiation monitoring on the workers. In addition, of course, one of the things they're doing is putting rock bolts into the roofs to keep the roof from collapsing, which is important in terms of worker safety as well. Typically, because the salt moves a few inches a year, they have to constantly be maintaining the mine, and we've had more than 9 months when that kind of maintenance wasn't happening. So a major thing the workers going into the underground are doing now is starting the rock bolting to try to keep the mine safe just to be in.
Well, and just a couple more questions to just continue painting a picture for our listeners. So there's no waste being stored, being shipped right now to WIPP. Where is all of the waste that would be traveling to WIPP being stored?
So there were three sites that were shipping to WIPP when the fire occurred on February 5th, Los Alamos National Lab, the Idaho National Laboratory in Idaho, and the Savannah River site in South Carolina. So all of those sites are now keeping their waste rather than shipping it to WIPP. There's a fourth site that's gotten implicated in all of this, which is Waste Control Specialists, which is just on the border of New Mexico and Texas near Eunice, New Mexico. When the fire occurred and then the radiation release occurred and Los Alamos could not ship directly to WIPP, they shipped some waste to Waste Control Specialists in Texas. And then in May, when it was discovered that there was a problem with Los Alamos waste, those shipments were stopped. But there is Los Alamos waste also at Waste Control Specialists. But since May, Los Alamos is continuing to store its waste. Idaho is storing its waste. Savannah River is storing its waste. It's important for listeners to understand that there is 91,000 cubic meters of waste in the WIPP underground that has come from these sites. So there's a lot less waste at all of the sites, Los Alamos, Idaho, and Savannah River, than there was when WIPP opened, because those sites and others have shipped a lot of their waste to WIPP, which is in the underground at WIPP.
You know, and we're going to spend a lot of time today talking about safety, but I'm wondering, is there an economic consequence to the state when WIPP is not operating, receiving waste?
So far, in general, I would say the consequence is the state has had to spend more money to try to figure out what happened. Neither Los Alamos or WIPP have laid off any people because of the accident. In other words, the WIPP contract continues to stay in force. The Los Alamos contract is in force. There are four managers at Los Alamos that were relocated, but that's different than other people not taking those jobs.
All right. And I thought I had read that there were layoffs from one of the LANL contractors, up to 40 jobs or something like that.
Well, but that's actually unrelated.
Okay.
Those workers were working to hurry up and get this waste, 3,706 cubic meters of waste, from Los Alamos to WIPP, which was supposed to happen by June 30th. So those workers were going to be laid off anyway, because their subcontract was to package this waste and get it to WIPP by June 30th. We're past June 30th, so that was going to end anyway.
And final question for you at this point. When is WIPP scheduled to reopen to receive nuclear waste?
The Department of Energy says they hope by March of 2016 they can start moving waste that's on the surface at WIPP from the waste handling building into the underground. They haven't actually given a date by which they expect to start shipping waste from Savannah River or Idaho to WIPP to start again, but it will not be in the next year, 15 months or so.
Okay, I want to let listeners know, and we're going to welcome John Heaton, also with us today. He's the chair of the Mayor's Nuclear Task Force in Carlsbad, and he has been kind enough to join us. Good morning, John.
Good morning. I'm pleased to be with you.
Thank you. And we're going to spend a little time with Patrick Malone from the Santa Fe New Mexican, and then we'll get to you. So hang on in there, John. But thank you for joining us. So, Patrick, welcome to New Mexico after being up in Colorado for many years. We've got a link on our Call-In Show webpage to the Santa Fe New Mexicans comprehensive LANL to Leak webpage, where the paper's continuing investigative coverage of the issue is detailed. In June, we had your New Mexican colleague, Stacy Matlock, on. The paper had just published her detailed piece titled Tracing Waste Drum's Journey from LANL to Leak. Listeners can find that archive program from June on our Call-In Show webpage. But Patrick, you've been working on WIP and LANL-related stories for the paper, and among the stories of yours that the New Mexican has published is your November 15th piece titled LANL Officials Downplayed Waste Dangers Even After Leak. One reader called it an extraordinary piece of journalism and noted that the New Mexican and newspapers like it serve as watchdogs for the public, quote, exposing what others in power would prefer that we not know. So my first question to you is, what did you expose in this and other recent articles that those in power might prefer we not know?
Well, what we learned came from emails obtained under the Freedom of Information Act. And like most of us, people in taxpayer-funded positions tend to discuss things a little more openly in an email than they might when a reporter calls them up. So some of the key details that we learned from these emails were what was omitted from the acceptable knowledge, which in layman's terms is the description of the waste from Los Alamos. They did not identify that there was a reactive organic kitty litter used as an absorbent. They did not identify that this was a highly acidic batch of waste, and we're talking in particular about the drum that ultimately burst at LANL on February 14th. They also didn't mention that they had used a neutralizer to treat that waste. So these were all disclosures that previously had not been made to even the folks at WIP. This was stuff that was discovered as they were vetting what might have led to this leak, and that's a process that continues. We also found out what level of openness went on between the folks at Los Alamos and the folks at WIP as they tried to determine these things. And one of the memos that came to light in this article was from a chemist at Los Alamos who compared the ingredients in the drum that burst to a plastic explosive, patented plastic explosive. They later were able to determine that that was not necessarily the cause of the burst, but what's troubling about it is the one-week lag time in the generation of this memo and when it was shared with the folks at WIP, which was only shared because it was a leak. And the person who leaked that information to decision-makers at WIP was actually reprimanded by the Department of Energy's Los Alamos site office. So it really gave us a window into the openness, the level of secrecy, and how willing these folks were to share information even with people directly affected by it, such as the WIP workers. When I visited with the president of the union down there just recently, they were shocked and appalled that this information wasn't immediately shared with them, and they're still waiting to see the periodic safety reports and evaluations that the Department of Energy is conducting. So people are still working in the dark there, and information is sort of trickled out at a pace that's slow and a little bit alarming.
And how did you obtain those emails, Patrick?
Well, this all kind of originates with the article that you mentioned before by Stacy Matlock, where she discussed this drum's journey from Los Alamos to WIP. And in the course of that investigation, she was able to find, you know, serial numbers for this particular waste stream, identification number for this particular drum. So from there, when Stacy handed off the Los Alamos beat to me, my first action was to file a Freedom of Information request with the Department of Energy, asking for all their correspondence, reports, and information on that particular waste stream. So that yielded, after several months of back and forth with the Department of Energy, about 200 emails, almost 3,000 pages of documents that really gave us a window into what was going on. And, you know, you need to keep in mind that this was just a very brief snapshot in time. This covers May into part of June. So there's a lot more out there. There's a lot that's been learned since these emails. There's a lot that was known before these emails, and we continue to sort of waited out for the rest of this Freedom of Information Act request to be satisfied. But what it did give us was a glimpse of some of the things that New Mexico Environment Department Secretary Ryan Flynn had hinted at earlier on, which were mislabeling of waste at Los Alamos. Mm-hmm. Well, mislabeling was the omission of these very ingredients that are being viewed as potential causes of the leak. There were steps on the WIP end that it can be argued that the contractors are out of contractual obligation and an obligation through their permit to know what was in that waste. They did not. There were just a bunch of lapses that we were able to get sort of a closer glimpse at through these emails and candid discussions between the people trying to figure out what went wrong here.
And John Heaton, we're grateful that you're joining us from Carlsbad and providing a voice from Carlsbad. And let's take a minute or two before our break just to, I'm wondering, there must be an interesting line that may be being walked down in Carlsbad. Gratitude for the work, for the industry, but concern about safety. Is that sort of a balance in play down there?
Well, without question, Kathleen, I think the whole community is concerned about safety and concerned about the what I think the community thought was a level of excellence that went on at WIP that we find did not exist. And obviously the AIB reports, the accident investigation reports that were sent out are very clear about what they found and found serious deficiencies in the operational activities, the training, a whole variety of things. And I think that you find those in the order that came from NMED in the first 20 pages. I think they're outlined very carefully what the major points were. And, this thing has happened. The fire was could have potentially killed a number of people. It was a tragedy all unto itself. Unfortunately, or fortunately, no one did die from that event, but there were some serious errors that were made in how the response to that occurred, and what the training level was of employees was very, very deficient. And so then the response to the radiologic event demonstrated those same things in the surface AIB report that went out. And I think that created deep concern in the community. Of course, WIP was not actually locally responsible for the leak that occurred. That was a mismanagement at LANL. But at the same time, what we call our central characterization program, which is required to look at the acceptable knowledge and should have recognized, and I think you find that in the order as well.
All right, and John, let me stop you right there for now, because I want to set the scene here for our listeners, and we will continue with that discussion. But I'm joined today by Santa Fe, New Mexican reporter Patrick Malone, by Don Hancock, the director of the Nuclear Waste Program at the Southwest Research and Information Center here in Albuquerque, and by John Heaton, chair of the Mayor's Nuclear Task Force in Carlsbad. There are several ways for you to participate in our discussion regarding developments at and involving the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant, or WIP, the Los Alamos National Laboratory, or LANL, and the proposed fines against both entities by the New Mexico Environment Department. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the callinshow webpage at KUNM.org. You may call our local number 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments. We'll be back with you after this short break.
Enjoy a great Irish night celebrating Christmas in Ireland with glorious music, traditional dance, storytelling, laughter, and plenty of Irish soul with the Kerry Dance Troupe, singers, actors, and live musicians. An Irish Christmas gets feet tapping and opens hearts in a sparkling Irish night. Dust off all cares and dance home with a smile Friday, December 19th in Popejoy Hall. Get tickets and information at popejoypresents.com. A message from the tax-exempt Popejoy Hall.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about the situation at WIPP, the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant in Carlsbad, New Mexico, the involvement of the Los Alamos National Laboratory in that situation, or LANL, and the proposed fines that were handed down by the New Mexico Environment Department against those entities. I am joined by Santa Fe, New Mexican reporter Patrick Malone, Don Hancock of the Southwest Research and Information Center, and John Heaton, who joins us on the telephone from Carlsbad. He's chair of the mayor's nuclear task force in Carlsbad. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we made a request to the New Mexico Environment Department Secretary Ryan Flynn to appear on this program. While he was unable to appear on the program, he did participate in a taped interview with KUNM on November 19th of this year. Let's take a listen to that clip and then get our panel's reactions to what Secretary Flynn had to say. Let's hear that clip.
Immediately, once we learned of the fact that there had been organic material added to a number of containers, a couple hundred containers, we took immediate action to require the Department of Energy to isolate that waste and ensure that the public was protected, really assuming what could be the worst. We took an unprecedented step. I issued two administrative orders that required both Los Alamos National Laboratory and WIPP to come up with waste isolation plans. And at the time, some critics felt like I was being overly cautious, but I felt like based on the information that we had, and more importantly, based on the information we didn't have, that my duty is to make sure that we're taking the most conservative approach to protect the public. I spoke at a conference over the summer, and that was one of the main messages I delivered at this conference was my frustration with the poor communication coming from Los Alamos National Laboratory. I think Patrick's story, there's a lot of moving pieces, very complex story. He did a really good job of digging in to a lot of the issues. And in fact, one of the memos that he obtained through Freedom of Information Act requests was new to us. We had never even seen that memo before. So I think the communication still needs to improve, and I think the state is we take our job very seriously, and we take these issues extremely seriously, and I think you'll see our actions over the next couple of weeks will demonstrate exactly how seriously we take some of the deficiencies we've identified. Going forward, there's just going to have to be a lot of corrective actions that are taken at the site. There's going to be consequences from a regulatory perspective for the shortcomings, and then there'll be requirements in terms of corrective actions that will be taken. And I'm not talking about a plan to fix something. We're going to require Los Alamos and WIPP to actually fix the issues that we've identified before we'll allow any more waste to be put on the road or to be deposited at the WIPP.
That was New Mexico Environment Department Secretary Ryan Flynn, who participated in a taped interview with KUNM on November 19th before the proposed fines were levied against LANL and WIPP. John Heaton, let's go back to you, because we were talking about worker safety and certainly safety of the public in Carlsbad. So when you look at it, is it your thought that the Environment Department has ensured, as Secretary Flynn claimed, that the public and workers are protected?
I think that Secretary Flynn has taken a tough, really admirable position that probably he should take. He is that's his position. He's a regulator. And I think he really, in view of all the facts that are available to him, I don't think he has any other alternative but to be punitive and to be very stringent about what he requires in terms of what he suggests as corrective actions, and not just written words, but actually corrective actions that in fact do occur. And I think that we feel strongly about corrective actions here in the community. It's a very difficult situation in terms of making choices. As an example, two of his administrative orders required that panel 6 be closed and room 7 of panel 7 be closed. And both of those probably represent the highest risk to workers and the community, the environment, if you will. So those orders were very appropriate in, from my perspective, and I think the committee's perspective. And I think that the difficulty is now there are other critical issues that have occurred. As an example, roof bolting hasn't occurred for some 9 months, and it wasn't until about 10 days ago that they recognized the risks associated with, I mean, they knew the risks associated with roof bolting, but it, the seriousness of it and the need to get back to it as quickly as possible. I think it's important for people to understand that the mine has very reduced airflow now. It typically ran at 420,000 CFM cubic feet per minute in the mine, and it's been reduced to 60,000, and that's a severe reduction of airflow. What it means is that only one piece of diesel equipment can be run at one time. So only one roof bolting machine can be used at one time. So the long pole in the tent to some degree is getting additional ventilation going in the mine. So there has been an additional skid-mounted HEPA filter that's been ordered that should be in the next few months and be able to be put in place, which will double that airflow from 60 to 100 and almost 120,000 cubic feet.
And that particular operation will protect workers and the public? Is that what we're getting
at,
John?
Yes, adding the ventilation means that more work can be done more quickly.
All right. Well,
And as an example, whether we were going to look at the waste with the cameras to make sure that there was not another drum, and whether that was more important or doing the roof bolting. Well, you can't close panel 6 until the roof bolting's done in front of it to prevent risks to workers. And at the same time, if you run it, you can't run another piece of diesel equipment at the same time to haul the Project Reach or the cameras into room 7 to take the photographs that are required by the AIB to assure ourselves that there's not another drum.
But all right. Okay. Let me stop you there. Let me stop you there, John. And you know, Don, I want to go to you because I know it's the past, and we want to believe that things are changing or will change. But when one researches, and specifically when I research, I can't help but notice that for 2 years preceding the February incident, the lab refused to allow inspectors conducting annual permitting audits for the New Mexico Environment Department inside the facility where the waste was treated. And only since the radiation leak has the Environment Department demanded that it go inside the facility for inspection. So we get back to this sense of trust, this sense of the public being protected and workers being protected. Would you comment on that, please?
Each of the facilities, Los Alamos and WIP, have permits, operating permits, to protect workers and the public and to try to ensure the safe operations. Those permits need to be complied with. What the Environment Department said in their order last Saturday was that the permits had been violated. In fact, the permits are continuing to be violated. There could be more fines and penalties in the future. My view, there should be. And neither Los Alamos nor WIP are doing the kind of efforts that they should be doing to get into compliance with the permit so that workers are better protected and the public is better protected. So the point of all that is this is the first stage of what needs to happen. And one of my concerns, and you asked earlier about when WIP is going to be reopened, the Department of Energy had a long history of setting deadlines for when WIP would open before it ever opened. It was a schedule-driven operation. What we don't need now is a schedule-driven operation. The facility needs to be safe. Los Alamos needs to improve their practices before, and they need to comply with the permit before we go on. But as I agree with what the secretary said, he should not allow WIP to reopen and handle waste until these problems are fixed, just identified.
And Kathy, from a perspective of safety, the project, I don't agree with what's just been said about what's going on now. Safety is the number one issue. In fact, it is driving everything to the extent that there's almost paralysis that's occurred because of the analysis of every step about how, what the pros and cons and if and what could happen at every step of the way, and it is being analyzed, and things that were said in the article about VOCs not being monitored for is not correct. Those VOCs are being, air quality is being monitored before every entry into the mine. And, of course, there's very little or no airflow, so the ability to move any of the VOCs from the rooms is very, very limited, but that does not, and they're still doing.
All right, John, so VOCs, volatile organic compounds, we see that even in paint we buy at the store. But I've got two people here at the table shaking their head, and I want to give them a brief opportunity. And Patrick, John Heaton said that what was in the article wasn't correct. So briefly, if you would address that, please.
So, on the volatile organic compound issue, from both the union president who does work there, who's been in the waste phase, he says volatile organic compounds are not being measured. The New Mexico Environment Department says volatile organic compounds are not being measured. And they acknowledge that it's a condition of the permit that they hold authority over at WIP. They also acknowledge that it's difficult to perform right now because there are contaminated areas. But the volatile organic compound testing is not being done, at least not to the extent that it was before. And if it is happening, I'd be very interested in seeing the sample data on that.
And John, have you seen the sample data?
I have not seen the sample data, but this is what I am told and have been told and believe that it's happening because, as an example, before they ever went down the first time, they dropped a probe down into the mine to do a complete air sampling so that they would know what the conditions were before they ever went down. And on top of that, people that are in what we call PPEs or personal protective equipment, when they went down and went in, they have air supplies that were being used. And those that are going to other places have filters that actually do filter VOCs. Not that everybody's wearing PPE now, but the point is that the air is being sampled, and the purpose of the VOC sampling, one of the major purposes, is protection of the employees, the workers that are there.
All right. Well, let's shift gears just briefly here. We're talking today about developments at and involving the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant, or WIP, and at LANLs, and the proposed fines levied against those facilities. I'm joined by Santa Fe, New Mexican reporter Patrick Malone, by Don Hancock of the Southwest Research and Information Center, and John Heaton, chair of the Mayor's Nuclear Task Force in Carlsbad. If you would like to join in our discussion, you may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may call our local number 277-5866 or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments. Before we go to our next break, we've had a caller online for quite some time. It's Bill from Los Lunas. And Bill, let's go to your question and maybe we can get a brief answer to it from at least one of our panelists here. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. The biggest nuclear power plant known to man is the sun, and they don't want to utilize it to its complete effort. However, we were told that the leak at WIP site came out into the surface. It had a radius of 5 miles, which makes the circumference 10 miles. Has that radius on the surface been cleaned up? And I mean every blade of grass, every bird that flew across the contaminated area. Has all that been cleaned up or has just been brushed aside? Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Bill. Don, you want to respond to Bill?
So there has not been cleanup on the surface. The Department of Energy and Nuclear Waste Partnership, the contractor, have said there's no need for it because the amount of radiation that came out is so small. And the 22 workers that were exposed internally weren't harmed, their view, not mine. And so, no, there hasn't been any cleanup. There's proposed to do some cleanup in the underground of the contaminated mine in the underground, which is pretty problematic from my standpoint.
Okay. And let's...
Kathy?
Yes?
The amount of radiation that occurred 0.6 miles from the exhaust system was an amount that if you would have had to have stood there for 15 hours to get the dose of a dental x-ray.
Okay, and John, thank you. We're always going to have that kind of tension between what people believe about exposure to people.
Well, there has to be some perspective about it.
I hear you. We need to go to our break. I do want to remind people they can join in our discussion. They can you can email comments to callandshow@kunm.org. You may call our local number 277-5866 or our toll free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll begin to talk about the proposed fines against these entities.
Consider yourself fortunate when the ghost of Tax Day Future visits you in the middle of your favorite KUNM program, showing you next April 15th when your old vehicle is still parked and you are sadly wishing for more tax deductions, when you could have been smiling because you helped KUNM by donating to it back in December and gotten a big tax deduction. There's still time to change your fate. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
What do skiing, journalism, food, and wine have in common? They're all topics we've highlighted over the last year here on Well Woman Radio. This month, I'm winding back the clock for a taste of some of them as we head into 2015. Join me, Giovanna Rossi, on Well Woman Radio, December 12th at 8 a.m. right here on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and we're talking today about the situation at WIP, the involvement of LANL, and the proposed fines levied by the New Mexico Environment Department. I am joined by Don Hancock of the Southwest Research and Information Center. I'm joined by John Heaton, chair of the Mayor's Nuclear Task Force in Carlsbad, and by Santa Fe, New Mexican reporter Patrick Malone. And Patrick, let me get to you, because this past Saturday, the Environment Department proposed $54 million in fines against LANL and WIP. The proposed fines were for violations. Violations of what?
Well, violations of essentially, at its core, the permit that the Environment Department holds that enables both of these institutions to operate. And there are certain expectations tied to those. The expectations are that there are bounds on what can be performed at Los Alamos. There are expectations that there's going to be a full and accurate accounting of what's in this waste. There are expectations that it's going to be safe for the public and for workers when it gets on the road, much less when it arrives at its destination. And on all these fronts, let's start with Los Alamos. These were not unexpected fines. I think what we've seen at this point is probably not the end of the story. I think what we're seeing are the most apparent, obvious things that Secretary Flynn has been talking about for a very long time, and I think that there could be more to follow. Let's start with labeling of waste. You know, at its core, we need to know what is in this stuff. It's very dangerous on its best day. On its worst day, it could be far more dangerous than it was in the WIP underground. We could add more people there. If there's one blessing for the February 5th truck fire, it's that there weren't more workers around when things went awry on February 14th. But dating back to that, let's get to the LANL side of it first. Los Alamos mislabeled waste, didn't include organic kitty litter, called it clay, outright lie on their paperwork. Next, they add an acid neutralizer when they realize that this is a zero pH, highly acidic batch of waste. Adding that neutralizer was outside the bounds of what's allowed under their permit. They were not allowed to do that, not in that building. And what they risked, if they had identified this waste as being as volatile as it was and in need of neutralization, it would have triggered an assessment process that would have greatly endangered meeting the New Mexico Environment Department's deadline of June 30th to have legacy waste from Los Alamos shipped to WIPP. Now, they were 90% of the way done with that job when things went wrong in February. What we have here is a case of a highly paid government contractor cutting corners. What they risked was far more than this fine. In fact, this fine, as significant as it is, and as it certainly is a representation that the New Mexico Environment Department takes this seriously, it's a drop in the bucket compared to their annual contract of $2.2 billion.
That's billion dollars.
Right, and we're still talking Los Alamos at this point. We haven't even gotten to WIPP, which is another $150 million a year.
All right, let me go ahead and bring in our caller, George from Albuquerque, who has a question regarding the fines. Good morning, George.
Good morning. Good morning. First of all, I want to thank Patrick, Don, and the Santa Fe New Mexican for taking the lead in bringing facts through the opaque fog provided by DOE. Also, I want to thank the underground workers at WIPP in performing their tasks in a very uncertain environment. My question is, and it's related to the fines. The taxpayers have paid for WIPP and have paid contractors to do a good job. Now, are the taxpayers going to eventually have to pay for these fines as well? And I'd like Don and Patrick both to respond to that question.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much for your call, George. Don, let's begin with you.
Well, we hope the taxpayers don't have to pay again. As the caller just said, we've already paid. We don't know the answer to that. Secretary Flynn was clear that he hopes that's not the case, that it doesn't come out of taxpayer money and doesn't slow down or take away from cleanup funding at WIPP and Los Alamos. But we won't know until we see what WIPP and Los Alamos actually pay. Remember, they haven't agreed to pay any of these fines yet. I hope they will pay them. But then to say where the money comes from, the companies that operate, as were said, are multi-billion-dollar companies at both Los Alamos and WIPP. In fact, the same contractor, URS and Babcock and Wilcox, is part of both the Los Alamos Limited Liability Corporation and the nuclear waste partner WIPP Corporation. So these have multi-billion-dollar companies with insurance policies. When you or I have a problem and have liability insurance, the insurance companies kick in. Well, let's see what the insurance companies with NWP and LANS want to do. So yes, my view would be it should not be coming from the taxpayers, but we won't know at least until the fines are paid and we have disclosure about where the money came from. Ultimately, taxpayers are paying because WIPP is saying it's going to cost at least $1 billion to get WIPP up and running. So that is taxpayer dollars to be paid that we are paying today, have paid in the past, and will pay in the future.
All right. And Patrick Malone, you noted earlier that the fines could be increased. There could be more fines coming. But isn't it true that the fines could also be reduced if corrective action is taken?
That's true. I mean, the steepest penalty that really either the overarching contractor groups that operate WIPP or LANL being the one that gets considerably more, what they face is potentially not getting the automatic renewal or extension, the one-year extension of their contract that comes with their annual assessment by the Department of Energy. Do you live up to expectations A, B, and C? If you do not, you not only are penalized, you know, what might amount to $8-10 million out of a $2 billion contract, you might not get that one-year extension that comes with that annual assessment. And that's what, ironically, The emails that we obtained indicate Los Alamos was trying to avoid when it rushed this particular drum of waste off the hill. And now I think it would be a surprise to anybody who's observed this closely if they got the built-in extension beyond 2018 when their current contract expires.
Let me read an email comment from Katie. She says, WHIP, the DOE, and NMED have totally lost community trust. Not that they had it in the first place. We knew people managing nuclear waste would eventually slack. Remember mixed waste landfill at Sandia National Labs, unsecured waste at LANL, and NMED agreement to under-inspect WHIP. That's an email comment from Katie. John, I want to ask you, has WHIP lost the community's trust in Carlsbad?
I think the community is really interested in getting WHIP operating again. They're very much interested in that. It's an important facility not only for the community and the state, but for the country. And it's the crown jewel of the cleanup program in the country. And so I think that there's definite concern about how WHIP was managed. And I think that that now is being hopefully mitigated as they work through all of the processes. But to answer the question of the gentleman that called earlier, you know, there are two things that go on with the both NWP, the contractor, and DOE are co-permittees. So there's going to be a dispute between them as to who is responsible for what happened and in terms of the fine. Now, the fine, if it is taken out of DOE's pocket, DOE will take it out of not only they'll take it out of the WHIP budget, and they'll also take it out of Los Alamos's budget. And then the net effect of that becomes to reduce the ability to mitigate the problem, get WHIP open again, to get LANL cleanup occurring like it should at a pace it should occur. And so the fines have a detrimental effect on the very actions that the money for the budgets were intended to hold out. Now, Secretary Flynn has made a conscious effort to try to make sure that money does not come out of the two budgets, which is, I think, a very important concept, and the first time that that's been attempted by a secretary that's done fining. So I think that being able to get it, the taxpayer, if DOE pays it, obviously will be the net payer of the fine, but having it come from another budget item, either an appropriation or come out of the settlement fund that the judiciary has, the federal judiciary settlement fund, are options that could potentially happen rather than coming out of the budgets. And I think that's an important concept to understand about fining and how contracts by the state, permits by the state, ought to be written in the future so that it avoids the budgets of the that are trying to solve the problem from being from deteriorating.
All right, you are welcome to join in our discussion today. We're talking about WHIP, LANL, and the proposed fines handed down to those entities by the New Mexico Environment Department. You can call our toll free number at 1-877-899-5866. You may call our local number 277-5866. I want to go ahead and read the joint response of LANL, the Department of Energy, and WHIP to our request for participation today. In response to your inquiry, my inquiry regarding the New Mexico Environment Department fines, here is a statement that can be attributed to a DOE spokesperson that was written to me. Quote, "The Department of Energy and its contractors self-identified and self-disclosed noncompliance with the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act to the New Mexico Environment Department. We continue to actively address these issues and are firmly committed to the safe, compliant, and effective remediation of all our legacy wastes and to recovering waste isolation pilot plant operations as safely and expeditiously as possible," unquote.
Don, let's begin with you. I know you wanted to add something that you feel is missing from this statement.
Yes. I wish they were saying they are expeditiously going to come into full compliance with the permits. They don't say that. Their documents, in fact, say for the foreseeable future, they will stay out of compliance with many provisions of the permit. So I wish they were focused on getting into compliance with all aspects of the permit.
And Patrick, the statement says the contractor self-identified and self-disclosed noncompliance. Is that accurate? I mean, or was it people like Don and the New Mexican sort of forcing the issue? And do the information you've obtained sort of give you insight into that?
Did they self-disclose? They did in July and August. They self-disclosed things that the emails we obtained make apparent that they knew in April or May. So if anybody takes the time to go to the New Mexican's website to read these documents, what you'll see is a group of DOE officials at WIP, at LANL, that, they turn to their contractors for what their public message should be. And that public message includes the way that they scrambled to address the questions of the New Mexico Environment Department. I think that there's a palpable sense of panic in these emails when they heard from the New Mexico Environment Department that it wanted to sit in on their daily briefings about the WIP investigation. And this was as far back as May. So there were things that were self-disclosed. They were not done immediately. Secretary Flynn has been adamant about the fact that, let's start with WIP. WIP did not disclose to the Environment Department that this accident even happened for a number of days. Then, as time went on, Secretary Flynn has characterized the DOE folks in Carlsbad and the WIP folks as very forthcoming. The shoe, I guess, switched feet, you could say, and Los Alamos, who he had characterized as very cooperative in the early going, and its Department of Energy affiliates have been very difficult to get information out of. Secretary Flynn, in late summer, at a meeting in Los Alamos, told me that he was very frustrated with Los Alamos and the lab about how difficult they were to get information from, even the most basic information. And so I take with a grain of salt any of these prepared two-sentence statements that often take a week or more to get, that have been passed through gatekeepers that are making billions of taxpayer dollars and whose livelihoods are at stake here. Whose interests are they most concerned about?
I want to make it clear, my process of calling people at WIP, at LANL, and being told we need something to come from headquarters, we're not going to address it here. So that's where it came from. Now, John, hang on one second, because we're coming to the close of our program, and I do want to give each of you an opportunity, probably about a minute at the most, to just sort of wrap up. And, John, please go right ahead. Let's start with you.
Okay. First of all, I want to thank Patrick for everything he's doing. I think that the work he's doing is very, very important. We are interested as a community in the truth, as is the state and he and others that are interested in this project. I would agree that the transparency of communication and the communication has been terrible.
All right, and
terrible right from the beginning.
All right, John, and we're going
to.
I'm going
to be poor.
All right, and Don, just very briefly, I know we didn't get to talking about contractors. Hopefully, we'll have another opportunity. Anything briefly you want to say?
I think the public ought to focus on compliance with the permit, making sure that workers are safe, making sure that workers actually have medical evaluation and treatment.
And Patrick, we're going to let you get the last word when we read your articles in the Santa Fe New Mexican. So I do want to encourage people to go to our webpage and go to that generalized webpage of the New Mexican. So thanks to our guests, Santa Fe New Mexican reporter Patrick Malone, Don Hancock of the Southwest Research and Information Center, and John Heaton, chair of the Mayor's Nuclear Task Force in Carlsbad, for making themselves available to our listeners. Thank you. Thanks also to our callers for helping to develop our discussion. Apologies to anyone we were unable to speak with. Thanks to our engineer, Jefferson White. Kaveh Movahed has handled our phones today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on KUNM, news and music that connect from the University of New Mexico.